Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, anyone who is a remotely regular listener to the show knows how I feel about soulmates. And worse, movie lines like, "You complete me." But I often feel like a salmon swimming upstream, or even worse, an absolute utter killjoy. I mean, who doesn't want to believe in love? And the truth is, I do believe in love, just not the kind that's sold in magazines, novels, and the movies. I believe in real love, which is much more complicated than the one that can be had if you can just find the one, that person who fulfills all your wants and fantasies and never causes you a moment of discomfort or distress. Real love is the type of love that is necessary for a good marriage. The problem? Few of us actually have seen good examples of this, so we don't know how to recognize it, or even better, create it. So writer Todd Evans of Simmering Nirvana is going to help me figure all this out. We're going to unpack this idea today. So I think I've got a great show for you. And Todd, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about what I consider like one of the fundamental challenges that people face today in trying to be in good relationships.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So you write, you're a writer, and you write regularly for the Good Men Project, which is a wonderful website, people, if you haven't been on it. And you wrote a recent piece called Romantic Delusions and the True Depth of Love. And the title, of course, grabbed my attention. And in this piece, you challenge the notion of romantic love as it's most commonly presented. And obviously, I agree with you on some level of this. So what is the problem with the prototypical view of romantic love?
Well, I think one of the primary problems is it puts the responsibility for our happiness and fulfillment into the arms of another. And this is incredibly disempowering. And really, do we want to have to rely on our partner for all our happiness? You know, it's just too much weight to throw on another person, and it will put a real huge strain on any relationship.
Well, yeah, but it's easier for me, isn't it, if I make it somebody else's job?
Well, you know, I think the notion of romantic love as the end-all and be-all, and that it's someone else's job is great until they don't do their job. You know? I mean, that type of love is always shallow and short-lived because soon enough, our partner will do something that we'll perceive as going against our happiness. And if they keep doing it, then, you know, out the door, I've got to find another one. You're not it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about finding one. There's one person out there of the billions of people on the planet who is going to be like your perfect match, your soulmate, that they are going to read your mind mm-hmm. and know what you need and give it to you before you even know you need it. It's like, how did we get into this? It's like, that is just craziness.
Yeah, it's really a false story, you know. I think it's something we were given with the movies, like you said, and the magazines. You know, the thing about the perfect one is eventually they are going to do something that doesn't meet our idea of perfection, you know. And maybe they're having a bad day or a rough time at the office, or maybe their allergies are acting up or something. They're fighting a cold, you know. I don't know. But they don't have the energy in that moment to be our everything. And we'll make them pay for that, you know. And that, how many relationships are this cycle of you're not meeting my needs, and so I'm going to make you pay for that injustice, you know, every chance I get. And that's just really a horrible way to be with another person.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. And you, but there is something really attractive. And again, I was talking about this before, because it's like, well, if I can just find the person who's going to fill all, you know, who's going to fill all my holes and take away all my pain, and I just have to kind of lie on the couch and let them do this. You know, hey, it's a good deal. But like you said, it's makes it really hard for that other person. And here's the other, the flip side of this, which people don't talk about, and it's what my issue is when we talk about unconditional love, which I'm not sure exists, but if it does, it's only parent to child. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm not even sure it's then, is that we want somebody to love us unconditionally, but we're not actually on board for loving other people unconditionally.
No, no, not at all, you know. Yeah, wouldn't that be great to just sit on the couch and be loved unconditionally and we didn't have to do any work? You know, how wonderful would that be?
But and probably the last time that happened to us, we were like 6 months old.
Yeah, yeah, right. And really, I don't think we, if that were our reality, that we would be that happy with that. Because I believe as humans, we're designed to become self-actualized beings, you know. We're designed to tap into and manifest our own potential. I think that's just the way the system is set up. And then, you know, when we can partner with another person who's on their own path of manifesting their own potential and bring those paths together kind of in a harmony, then you're really collaborating. And it's work, you know, but it's the best work. It's the greatest, most joyful work.
Yeah, I have, and one of my things is I don't like using that term work only because it implies something negative. And so almost when you say joyful work, it's like, wait a minute, that's an oxymoron. but this is really what it's about. And so I think this whole concept of this romantic love and the soulmate and, you know, you complete me, which makes me want to vomit almost every time I hear that. You know, basically is has us living in an immature adolescent kind of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and I think it's sort of like, you know, eons ago, and I'm dating myself because there was a movie many years ago called Jimmy Neutron, and it was the concept where, you know, the parents got kidnapped by, you know, aliens, and so the kids were left without parents, and for the first couple of days they thought it was great because they could, you know, eat candy and stay up all night, and then, you know, after about 2 days or 3 days they got really tired of it and they missed their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to me that's somewhat this idea of romantic love and, you know, and all these articles that I read about, you know, how to know if they're the one, or what signs will show you that they aren't the one. And, you know, I'm like going, oh, can we please grow up?
Yeah. In the article, I actually talk about that, like that romantic love is sort of like the cake and ice cream, you know, mm-hmm. I forget exactly how I put it, but, you know, and we're grown-ups, so we can have cake for dinner every night if we want to, and we'll soon discover, probably about night two or three, that maybe cake for dinner every night isn't such a good idea. We're not built, we're not designed to have cake for dinner. I mean, we're really designed for that depth of love, that love that, pardon my use of the word, you have to work for.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean more like a work of art, you know, it's a joyful engagement. I mean, we are designed to work towards that self-actualization, and we're designed also to be in partnership, you know,
mm-hmm.
to collaborate with another on this life journey. And a commitment to that collaboration, which requires some effort, not struggle necessarily, although some days may feel that way, but effort, you know, and that's the essence of shared love. But for this collaboration to work, you know, I have to be willing to bring my best to the table, you know, my completing of myself to the table.
Well, and it's interesting that you phrase it like that, and as you were talking, and we're, you know, and my my antipathy to the word work and love in the same sentence. But as you described it, to me, that's where the sentence or the phrase labor of love comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it's something that requires action and attention and effort, but it, as you phrased it, it's joyful. And it's also one of those things where, you know, kind of going back to lying on the couch and, you know, just being adored, which sounds great in theory, is that then that becomes the norm, and there's no, how do we know if we're happy? If it's, to me, that's a flat line. If there's no downs, there can't be any ups.
Mm-hmm.
And but you also, in your piece, talk about some of the problems that are caused by buying. You call it delusional thinking. And so what do you mean, first off, by delusional thinking? And then what are the problems with it?
Well, I believe it's delusional because, again, I like to this idea, and I use it kind of metaphorically, of how we're designed, you know, and keeping and maintaining the integrity of our system. And if we give up our power to another, you know, in other words, you need to be my everything. You need to fill all the gaps and holes within me. And you're the arbiter of my happiness and fulfillment, then I'm missing out on the chance to manifest my own potential. You know, we're working against how we were originally designed or created. And this is a very limited way of moving through life and will cause us all kinds of grief. We're really not made to just sit on that couch and be adored, as wonderful as the idea sounds, you know. And, of course, no one can meet the image we all carry of that fantasy one who will make all things right, you know, the soulmate waiting out there somewhere to magically give us this magnificent life. You know, I think the thing about the perfect one, again, is that eventually they're going to do something that's going to not be perfect for us. and so when you have a deeper kind of relationship and a commitment with someone, then you have, you know, roads to navigate those days that aren't the best, you know, and you have that trust in each other, which to me is one of the greatest joys in life, is having that kind of partnership where you trust someone with literally your life,
mm-hmm.
you know, in every situation. But that trust is I mean, it's earned. It truly is. And it takes time to develop. And, you know, it's not a love at first sight kind of thing or a soulmate thing. It's, you know, you've been together, you've experienced life together, you've been in all kinds of situations together. You know, I think, you know, I get confused on what articles are what because I write one every week for them, but I believe it was this one where I talk about the death of my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 3-day process. And my wife was there for every moment, and I didn't have to even, you know, ask her or think about it. She was just a solid, supportive presence, and it was just natural. And, of course, I would do the same for her. I, you know, there's that trust and that commitment. How glorious. And it's so much better than that idea of romantic love, you know. It's like a really good, healthy meal that's really satisfying as opposed to just a piece of cake.
Well, and I love your description of that, and it reminds me of a quote that the late actress Ann Mira said when she was talking about her husband Jerry Stiller. And, you know, she said, it wasn't love at first sight, but after 25 years, it sure was. And I thought it was
perfect.
A great quote.
That's wonderful. You know, and that really is. It's that trust that develops, that commitment to that third element. You know, it's you, it's your partner, and then there's that third element, the relationship.
Right.
And each of you have that commitment to that third element and feed it, you know, for the benefit of the whole system.
Right.
So,
and
yeah.
we'll continue that in just a moment, but I have to remind people that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm taking on some of the damaging concepts of romantic love with writer Todd Evans. And if you've bought into this concept and find yourself disappointed with your relationship, guess what? You're not alone. But you don't have to remain caught in this trap. You can have a truly connected and fulfilling marriage. And if you want to know what real love is and how to have it in your life, I invite you to take action today. You can give me a call or you can send me an email and take advantage of my free, no obligation, create your real happily ever after marriage strategy session. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463, again, 919-924-0463, or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And I want to get back to this conversation about the difference between romantic love and real love. And you know, one of the things that I hear all the time when I'm working with my clients is, you know, they will actually tell me, it's my job to make my partner happy, and I want to scream and pull my hair out when I hear that, because, one, I realize that's part of this whole romantic love thing, that this delusional thinking that somehow I can meet all of my partner's needs and I'm never going to disappoint them. You can't. That is not the truth, as we're talking about today. And happiness, guys, is an inside job. And this is, I think, Todd, what you're talking about in terms of being responsible for our own choices, our own behaviors, our own feelings, and that's actually part of what we're designed to do. Have I got that right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, we're all here, and we're on this planet, and we're learning, and we're growing, and we're stumbling about, and we're trying to discover, you know, those deeper pools of love. And I believe a big part of learning is really about unlearning those limited lessons that don't further us along the path, you know. We're taught those stories about only finding fulfillment in the arms of another. And those stories are a great disservice. It's a disservice to ourselves, you know. So if we could let go of those stories and maybe find some new stories or new maps to navigate, you know, this wonderful and terrifying life by, that's a horrible responsibility to put on yourself, that, you know, I have to be responsible for my partner's happiness. I mean, how?
Oh, I know. It's I think that's one of the reasons why people are somewhat terrified, actually not somewhat, they are terrified of this, because they, as I said earlier, a lot of times we don't see it. And I loved your description, because I have described it this way, and I'm always thrilled when I meet people who I haven't really talked to before who have the same way of thinking, and then I go, oh great, I'm not crazy, is this idea of the something bigger, the something more than just the two people. You know, there's, like as you pointed out, there's you, there's your partner, and then there's this third thing that you create, which I think is what everybody's striving for, but the normal stories, the common stories don't show that. Except sort of like maybe in the discussion that you shared the story with when your mother was dying and your wife was with you, or, you know, the story, I don't know if you've heard this, but there was a man, as a couple in England, and as they were getting older, she was losing her eyesight, so he learned how to apply makeup so that she could always look her best. And I thought that was the most beautiful. I mean, and to me, that's the love story. Because that was that commitment that you're talking about. That was bringing his best to the relationship, to her, wanting to do something completely just for her, not out of a sense of adoration, but out of a sense of, as you said, trust, love, that deeper stuff.
Yeah, and I'm sure it wasn't even something he considered. You know, I have the feeling he probably just did it.
Yes.
You know, as a natural unfolding of their relationship together. You know, and that third thing, that bigger thing, I think it's good to be aware of this idea that you and I together are this sort of gestalt that the sum of our equal parts is larger than both of us or our individual selves. But we don't have to worry about it too much. I think it just sort of, if you know, I like what you said, you know, happiness is an inside job, and fulfillment, I believe, is the same way. Our fulfillment is an inside job. And when we're in an empowered relationship, then we have a safe and supportive space for our own self-development and growth, and that creates the current that literally moves us toward self-actualization and actually creates that, you know, the space for that third element relationship to really unfold. Yeah, that's a beautiful story.
I love that. But here's the question, because it seems almost like we tend to be going backwards, and maybe backwards isn't the right term, but people seem to be retreating more into themselves. I mean, I read things and I hear things about, oh, I don't want to get married or be in a intimate relationship because I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to have to give up too much. I'm going to have to do things I don't want to do. And I'm like going, and I was like, oh, you're missing the point. But it's becoming easier now. I mean, you know, we can quote, connect, unquote, on social media, and I think social media has some really good aspects to it, but I also think it gives a false sense of connection. But we think, well, if I'm doing it on social media, then I'm really connected to people, but I'm actually ignoring the person who's sitting next to me in the room. How do we help people get past this idea? I mean, you know, we're now creating, these are being created sex robots, so we don't even have to have sex with a real person. I'm like going, oh my, I'm just seeing the world as like how awful and cold. And as you're talking about, we're not built to be that way.
No, we're not. And I think that's why, you know, if you look at the statistics as a society plugged in, which we are, we're also a society very heavily medicated because we're so depressed and we're so anxious. And I think a big part of that is maybe self-delusion that, oh, well, you know, I have my friends on, you know, Facebook I'm hooked into my social media, so I'm connected. And really, you know, I think in the article I used the image of two people standing shoulder to shoulder and looking out onto the vastness of life, which is, you know, wondrous and frightening and mysterious, and each offering their strengths and support to each other. And that's really the joy of it, that is that connection that so many people, I think, are missing out on, you know, that collaboration, that partnership, you know, that we are designed to be. I really do believe we are in the tiniest depths of our DNA, we are designed to collaborate with another. And if we don't, or, you know, we're missing out and we're not necessarily complete. And I don't want that to sound like, oh, I need you to complete me. But it's like the best of me really shines in your eyes. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense to me. And as you were talking, I had another visual about, you know, the one stick by itself can be easily broken, but the more sticks that are gathered together, that's where the strength is. And so that's kind of what you're talking about to me, about this standing shoulder to shoulder, and we can face the joy and the challenge together, and it actually takes on a much deeper meaning.
Absolutely. You know, that shared life it is really a life worth living, you know, and again, I'm going to use that dirty word. It requires work.
Yeah.
But it's good work. It's mm-hmm. the best work. And a willingness to really kind of shrink our own egos down a bit and really get to know the other person. And then that's where the trust is developed. And boy, when you have that trust in another person, that makes things so much better. You know that regardless of what rains down, there's this person who has your back
mm-hmm.
and who will at 3 o'clock in the morning, take you to the emergency room or who will sit by your side for 3 days as your mother passes, or put makeup on when you can't maybe see as well, but you still want to look your best.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put makeup on you. So that's it, And it's not really complicated. For me, the criteria is, first and foremost, is I really enjoy the other person's company.
Right.
I just really like being with this. I like traveling. I like, cooking dinner together. I like sitting on the couch and watching movies with this other person. And that's comfortable, and it's as simple as that.
So how, as individuals, let alone society, but I'm just going to start with the individuals, how as individuals do we move more towards this? Because I believe down to my very, inner fibers that this is what we need, that this is, just as you described, that this is in our DNA, that this is what we're made for. But it can be scary. It can be terrifying. And we're, the old adage, we're going to kiss a lot of frogs before we find, But again, I always tell people, it's like no matter how good or bad a previous relationship, it can teach you something about you and about the next one. So is that the pathway, is that we just be open to learning?
Well, absolutely. I think being open is a big part of it. But I think, as we move towards that greater love, we do it by finding it within ourselves first. Mm-hmm. Again, as you said, that happiness, and as I said, that fulfillment is an inside job. And I think the more empowered we become through our own process of growth and learning, the more attractive we become. And, I'm talking about attraction like a magnet, like attracting uh-huh. others who are engaged in the same type of personal development and growth. And this is really important, who also take responsibility for their own emotional landscape. I mean, I think that's really key, is my emotions are mine. And I have to take responsibility for them. It's not, it's kind of cliche, but it's cliche for a reason. It's not you make me mad.
Yes.
It's that I am mad, And if you have those elements, then I think that's a really great recipe for finding and developing that juicy partnership and collaboration that's so wonderful.
And I love that, because this is one of the things, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, is I get to choose how I want to be in the world and how I want to interpret something that my partner or another person is doing. And I tell the story, I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and that's where I learned to drive. So I have serious difficulties with some of the drivers around where I live now. And mm-hmm. I find myself sometimes getting really upset with what they're doing. But, on my best days, I'll go, maybe that person who's driving on my tail, and if I actually have to slam on my brakes, is going to be in my back seat, maybe they just have to get somebody to the hospital, or they have to get to their child. So I just go, okay, let me just pull over. Now, they could really be being jerks, but I get to choose, and I usually end up feeling so much better when I go, okay, just go on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to get out of your way. You obviously have something that's really important to do, so let me. And I feel better, and I have no idea whether or not that's a true story, but I get to make it true for me.
Well, and you're, again, it's that something we don't talk about, and it's not taught in schools, and I wish it was, you know, is our emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so I like that idea of emotional intelligence, because inherent in that idea is the fact that it's something we learn. And I think, you know, you maybe didn't naturally come to the place where I'm just going to pull over. This is something that you learn through experience. If I pull over and let this person pass, regardless of what their story may be, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's going to a hospital or they are just being a jerk, I will feel better. And I won't have this person riding my tail anymore. You know, and so for the cost of pulling over to the side of the road and taking 30 seconds, you get to have this great peace of mind. How wonderful. And we have to learn to do that, because our knee jerk is to slam on our brakes or slow down or engage somehow to try to win,
mm-hmm.
you know, and show that person what kind of jerk they're being. And that's really a no-win
right, by being
for everybody.
As much of a jerk or a bigger
exactly.
jerk in response.
You know, look at our politics today. This is what we're seeing, you know.
Yes.
If people are just being jerks to each other, and it's just ratcheting up, and there's not a lot of emotional intelligence. And that is something I think that relationship, good, you know, strong, juicy relationship, gives us the opportunity to develop that emotional intelligence. It's truly wonderful.
Well, and I love that, and I think that more, as you said, more needs to be talked about emotional intelligence, but the fact is it's something that can be learned, and I think that that's what this whole conversation has been about, is that, you know, we all want these wonderful, safe relationships where we know somebody has our back, where, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, when we're not, you know, when something happens, we've got somebody right there who is ready, willing, and wanting to support us. But mm-hmm. being able to do that is not something. I think you're right. I do think that there's a natural part of us, which is what is drawing us to that. But we have so much social learning on top of it that we can actually unlearn. And I love that concept.
Yeah, it's really, you know, this planet affords such a wonderful opportunity for us to learn and grow. And I wish we would take this more often, you know.
I think part of the reason is that usually we learn through things not going right, quote unquote, whatever right would be. You know, that we grow. I mean, it's going back to a book by Pat Conroy, I think it was his book, My Losing Season, where he basically says, winning teaches us nothing. it's when we lose that we have the opportunity to learn. And
yes.
But losing hurts, and loving sometimes hurts. In fact, loving almost always will hurt at some point in time.
Yes, yes. And I think that's something else that we've sort of lost, or maybe lost sight of, is the value of being able to be with the pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's the nature of life is pain. Again, you had mentioned earlier about, you know, you can't really embrace and experience the highs without having that dichotomy of the lows. And pain is a part of the growth, you know, of us, for us humans, and we can learn how to mitigate the pain, because mm-hmm. we can experience pain, but so many times we identify as the pain, you know, I'm such a loser, or, you know, no one loves me, and that mm-hmm. becomes our identity, as opposed to, you know, the pain of maybe tonight I'm feeling lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's different. It's funny,
yeah.
You know, I think back when I was, you know, a person, when I kind of believed these romantic illusions and mm-hmm. looking for the one and looking for healing and happiness in somebody outside of me. And I was really needy. And it's funny, I don't think I would necessarily want to partner up with that person who I was.
Oh, you must be talking about my 19-year-old self who was, I think back and I'm just like going, oh my gosh, you were just so pathetic.
Oh, really? I was in my late 20s, so well done.
I didn't get over it at 19. That's just when it became, when I look back, it became very apparent. It took me a few more years to get past that. But yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, and you were talking about that confidence, in confidence in ourselves and being able to learn, and that really is attractive.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It truly is. And it makes us, you know, it creates that opening within us where we're confident enough to be vulnerable to someone else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where the trust is developed, because we open up our hearts, you know, and which are just the most vulnerable organ, you know, spiritually, physically, and we bring someone into it, and it's like, well, you're either going to crush it or you're going to empower it. But that takes confidence to be, it's a scary thing to become vulnerable in front of someone. But again, that's what we're here to do.
And it actually takes a little bit of experience, too. So that's actually the other thing. It's like, because sometimes we have to learn who is trustworthy and who isn't. And also, sometimes we have to learn to become trustworthy, because sometimes we don't always start out that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. We have to learn to become trustworthy, because maybe no one has expected it at that deep level of us before. But it's what we want from another, so we have to be that ourselves, you know. And again, it's a learning process. You know, the metaphor of Earth is a school, and we're here to learn. And to me, that's the greatest thing, is we can just build and kind of self-evolve.
And I agree. I think that's absolutely fantastic. So please, can you share where people can learn more about your philosophy, about learning how, you know, this connection, and in your writings, because I know you talk about this in many other places and in many other ways, and I think I always want to give people resources where, okay, go read, go learn. This is the journey we're on.
Well, thank you. I have a website. It's called Severing Nirvana. SimmeringNirvana.com, and it's kind of where all my writing is parked, or at least the links to my writing. Also, I have a Facebook page, Simmering Nirvana, and you can find me on Twitter, Todd Evans, Todd with 1D. Sometimes I tweet.
Terrific. So, you know, as we've been talking about, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, and one of my favorite quotes really applies to this. It says, "Marriage is our last best chance to grow up." And today we've been talking about the kind of love that makes this possible. And it isn't the kind of love that completes us. It's the deeper love that makes us whole. And creating this kind of love, as you've heard, takes a certain amount of courage. So are you brave enough to step up? And hopefully you'll keep listening to the show and keep learning. And until next week, stay loving.